Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 25, 2015. South Sudan's foreign minister says the international community should impose sanctions on the rebels fighting his government.
The African Union cannot on its own, the Secretariat on its own, to try and ask for sanctions on the Republic of South Sudan when a large number of countries are saying no, there should be no sanctions on South Sudan. If it is the issue of escalation of fighting, it is the rebels that they should sanction.
And the government says its forces have retaken control of Malakal.
As a Minister of Defense, we'll have to meet to disarm those who have taken up the guns. Because if they opted to take up the guns, then we must also meet them with guns.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The African Union agrees with the United States and its allies that sanctions and arms embargoes should be imposed on leaders of South Sudan's warring parties to force an end to the country's 17-month-old conflict. The African Union Peace and Security Council said in a statement that the current escalation of conflict that threatens to unleash irreversible consequences for South Sudan. But South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin tells VOA's James Batty that sanctions would only fuel the conflict.
I just came back from the summit of the Great Lakes region. In the communique which they issued just on the 18th of May, this is what they said, that no UN sanctions, whether targeted sanctions or arms embargo, be imposed on South Sudan, as this would be counterproductive and only serve to exacerbate the situation. Therefore, the African Union cannot on its own, the Secretariat on its own, to try and ask for sanctions on the Republic of South Sudan when a large number of countries are saying no, there should be no sanctions on South Sudan. If it is the issue of escalation of fighting, it is the rebels that they should sanction, because the rebels have been attacked government position, and the government has got the constitutional right to protect the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of this country and to keep law and order and good governance. So they cannot equate. There is no moral equivalency at all between the government and the rebels.
Mr. Minister, you are talking about the African Union and the African Union Peace and Security Council. They know your government. They know the warring factions. And so if they say that they are disappointed over the failure of your leaders and the rebel leaders to rise up over what they call personal and factional political interests.
My leader, President Salva Kiir Mayardit, has not failed in that process. As I'm telling you now, there is nowhere in the world where a government sits and then rebels attack the government and the government remains hand-folded. What the Peace and Security Council of the African Union should do is to listen to other members. Don't forget, South Sudan is a member of the African Union. I'm telling you, 12 countries just a week ago said these sanctions are inappropriate.
If the African Union Peace and Security Council comes up and then the United States ambassador to the United Nations all are coming up and say they are working on something for sanctions, are you not concerned you've been boxed in a corner?
We are concerned because the system they are doing is wrong. The African Union Peace and Security Council should bring it to the General Assembly of the African Union, where the 54 countries will sit and see the proposal. And as I'm telling you, out of this number, I'm already telling you 12 countries have said no.
Don't you think everyone is frustrated with what's going on in South Sudan?
But you must direct your frustration. Who is frustrating people? I'm telling you, the frustration comes from the rebels, not the government. This is what I'm trying to share with you. The government has given all the compromises for a peaceful solution.
Mr. Minister, if you were to talk to the African Union in terms of the way forward, the way to avoid arms embargo and sanctions on your government, what would you tell the African Union? What's the way forward?
The way forward, what I'm telling the African Union is please you support the IGAD peace process to continue, because already now the IGAD peace process, we have agreed on 90% of issues connected with the formation of the transitional government of national unity, with issues related to the governance, with issues related to reconciliation. A lot has already been done. That's what they should be doing. They should not be looking around for areas which are inappropriate, like talking of sanctions.
That's South Sudan's Foreign Minister, Barnaba Marial Benjamin, speaking with VOA's James Batty from Juba earlier this week. One of the states that has seen an increase in fighting lately is Upper Nile. Defense Minister Kwal Manyang says government forces now control Malakal. Forces loyal to General Johnson Oloñ had taken control of the capital of Upper Nile State about 10 days ago. Manyang says government forces are determined to disarm opposition fighters because of the continuing assaults on government positions, especially in oil-rich areas like Unity State. Philip Thona Liu has more for VOA News from Juba.
Manyang told reporters at Parliament that there are no casualty figures yet, as government forces just entered Malakand today. But he says the defeat of opposition forces there is just the beginning of a major military offensive.
As a Minister of Defense, we will have to meet to disarm those who have taken up the guns. Because if they opted to take up the guns, then we must also meet them with guns.
As if that means the government is declaring a right war on opposition forces and abandoning its effort to end the 17-month-old conflict peacefully, Manyang had this to say.
We'll move on them wherever they go and clear the country from the armed groups. We'll do that everywhere. We'll move everywhere and disarm everybody that is carrying guns. Whether it's an organized body or the unorganized carrying the guns, unlawfully, we'll take these guns.
Manyang spoke to reporters after appearing before the Council of States, the upper house of South Sudan Parliament. He was summoned to explain the nation's general security situation following increased fighting in Upper Nile, Unity and Jonglei states, as well as last week's killing of a senior government staffer in Munduri, Western Equatorial State. Manyang requested more time to prepare a comprehensive report, so the Council of States adjourned until next week. Manyang says authorities are investigating Friday killings of Munduri West County Executive Director John Klaffer in Western Equatorial State on Friday, and says the government is restoring calm to the area.
The commanding officer, Major General Johnson Jimo Okot, is already in Munduri. I believe he will contain the security situation and the investigation will continue.
Hundreds of people are reported to have fled the area following last week's killings. For BOA News, I am Philip Thona Leu in Juba.
South Sudan's ruling party says some of its members who were detained shortly after fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013 are coming back home. The acting secretary general of the ruling party, Ann Ito, says the return of the former political detainees is a step towards reunifying the party and ending nearly 1 year and a half of conflict in South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Most of the 10 high-ranking political figures who were detained after unrest erupted in Juba 17 months ago were released to the custody of the Kenyan government after 6 weeks. 4 others spent months in jail and eventually went on trial for treason, but the charges were thrown out. Now the SPLM wants to put all of that behind it and bring the men known as the former detainees back to Juba. Ito told the journalists at a news conference in Juba that a first group of the former detainees
will arrive Juba this coming week. And before they arrive, we'll have a visit from the Secretary General of CCM, the ruling party in Tanzania. He will be arriving on the 27th after consulting with Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya and then President Museveni of Uganda.
Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM, brokered talks in Arusha that led earlier this year to an agreement to reunite the SPLM. The party splintered in December 2013. CCM's Secretary General Abdurrahman Kinana and South African Vice President Cyril Ramaphosa, who also took part in the African effort to reunify the SPLM, will arrive in Juba before the first group of former detainees returns home. That group will include former Foreign Minister Deng Alor, former Justice Minister John Luke Jock, and 3 others of all whom once held ministerial positions in the South Sudan government. Ito welcomed the homecoming of the former officials.
This, of course, is good news to the SPLM and to the entire SPLM family and to South Sudanese, because it will be marking the beginning of getting to tackle those difficult problems that were the sources of the conflict. It would mean that, you know, once they are here, we'll begin implementing the SPLM reunification agreement.
Former Justice Minister Jock says the return of the political detainees is one of the provisions agreed to in Arusha to reunify the SPLM. In fact, little progress has been made on implementing the Arusha agreement since it was signed in January. Under the deal, the ruling SPLM, which is loyal to President Salva Kiir, and the SPLM in opposition, which backs former Vice President Riek Machar, both take responsibility for the conflict that is continuing in parts of South Sudan to this day. The agreement also says the three SPLM factions should also function as one party. The warring sides continue to blame each other for the fighting, and the SPLM is still not reunified. Ito blames Machar's SPLM in opposition faction for stalling implementation of the Arusha agreement and reunifying the party. Abraham Awolich is a researcher and analyst with the Juba-based think tank The Soot Institute. He says the imminent return of the former detainees indicates that the Arusha agreement is beginning to be put into action.
The arrival of former detainees in Juba, if they were to make it, will significantly show progress toward confidence building between the two parties, and it will change the political landscape.
But Awolich says the return is a small piece of a big problem. He says Mr. Kiir, the SPLM leadership, and the former detainees
have to recognize that the party that they claim to be leaders of is completely bankrupt in terms of ideas. So what they need is to revive the ideological grounding of the party and try to remobilize the country with a new outlook, with a new political program, among which peace is a priority.
Awolich says South Sudan's current crisis stems from the failure of the SPLM leaders to steer the country in the right direction. He argues that all of the party's programs should be geared towards ending the 17-month-old conflict in South Sudan, which has killed thousands and displaced at least 2 million people and is showing little sign of ending. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A Sudanese church leader says a government plane bombed his residence in southern Kordofan earlier today. Retired Catholic Bishop of Elobey Diocese, Makram Max Gassis, says Sudan armed forces are targeting churches, hospitals and schools in their fight with the rebels of the SPLA North. He says the bomb destroyed part of a house occupied by diocesan priests.
If they want to fight the SPLA North, let them go and search for them. They know that this place here, there is the church, there are the fathers, there are the students, and there are the sisters. Why do they bomb there? This is really diabolic. If today you ask the embassy here, they will say this is not true, as they said some time ago. I'm really angry.
This is not the first time that there are reports of Sudan government dropping bombs in Nuba Mountains. And this latest report of your compound being targeted, do you think the government in Khartoum is targeting churches?
Here in the embassy, they deny it. When I said they bombed Mother of Mercy Hospital, this fellow here in the embassy said, our soldiers, our troops do not bomb hospitals, churches, and schools. They bombed the school. The year 2000, they killed 15 students and their teachers. They bombed our hospital. They wounded two people. And they keep on telling lies to the international community. A diabolic person would do such things by killing innocent civilians.
You express your frustration to President Bashir, who is the commander-in-chief of the army.
You know, in Arabic, there is a proverb which says it's useless to beat a dead body because it will not feel anything. To talk to Bashir, and as if I'm talking to a dead person, because he is the head of the serpent. I mean, these people, they just go without anybody telling them to go. It's impossible. So to talk to Bashir, it's a waste of time. I met Bashir 4 years ago after 18 years absent from Khartoum. He shook my hand and he said to me, oh, how are you? We heard you were sick and all this niceties. And then he says to me, how did you come in without permission? I said to him, I don't need permission. I know they were searching for me, and they were asking the cardinal, where is Bishop Makram? Why don't you tell him to come back?
Bishop, you have been in exile throughout your life. Since you became a priest and you became a bishop in Sudan, you have been in exile. How is life for you in exile?
It is not a pleasant thing. In fact, I have been out of my diocese for the last 19 years. I went only once after 18 years because I had to go to Elobey, and I was assured by some friends like Bona Malwal, that nobody will touch me. And I went to Alobeid for the ordination of my successor, Michael Beebe. Yes, to be far away from the center of my diocese, it is not a nice feeling. It is like a divorce. The feeling. Only those who go through it will understand what I mean. But still, my consolation is I've been helping my people. I made for them the hospital. It became the beacon of hope for so many people. From 80 beds, now it is almost 400 beds. The schools, from primary to secondary, the bore wells we drilled with the machinery up to 245 wells. I said to myself, I am not going to be conditioned by the war, because there are people, and these people, they need to be helped. And that's why my priests and my sisters are there in the front line.
That's retired Catholic Bishop of Elobeid Diocese, Makram Max Gesis. He was speaking to me from Nairobi earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese women who want a voice at the peace talks take a one-week workshop on the art of negotiating. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think a university education is important to reach your life's goals?
Simply, I can say university kind of school is not enough. You need to also have some skills, some innovative kind of knowledge that helps you, and also some informal kind of education. That's what I think.
Those degrees, actually, it depends on your intention. Before you begin to study, first thing is what? Your choice or what you demand for your future is. And those who think is not enough for them, they keep on pushing ahead of that.
I think university education is definitely the best, because in my country, with only a background of A-level or A-level education, is no longer really important.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Women say their voices have been missing from the peace talks. Some travel to Addis Ababa for the IGAD-led peace talks, but very few, if any, have been seated at the negotiating table, although they are represented at the committee level. In Nairobi recently, the United Nations organization, UN Women, sponsored a five-day workshop designed to empower key South Sudanese women in civil society, the government, and the opposition parties. Queen Makalele reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Priscilla Joseph has been an advocate for women in South Sudan for several decades. She is well aware of barriers that block progress for women in her country, including the fact that only one of the every six women can read and write. But Joseph says that South Sudan women deserve to have a voice at peace negotiations.
Our issues are about the schools, our issues are about the water, our issues about the hospitals, our issues is about the roads, our issues is about we want to get rid of poverty.
Joseph, who once served as South Sudanese Deputy Minister of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, is the chairperson of South Sudan Women Peace Network. She says that when it comes to figuring out how to end the nearly 18 months long conflict, some men believe that women are not equipped to sort out this kind of problems. That is why Joseph was grateful for the support of the UN Women Organization in Nairobi. The sessions, including practical exercise about negotiation, conflict resolution and management, 25 women from the government, civil society and the SPLM in opposition participated in the training under the theme One Voice Women Agenda for Peace and Sustainable Development in South Sudan. Though journalists were not allowed to record workshop sessions for security reasons, Joseph says the meeting yields some very serious messages for government and rebel leaders who have so far failed to produce peace in her country.
When we are talking about security arrangements, we are not talking about two armies. We want those guns to be taken away from them. We want those who have been recruited just for fighting to be demobilized and rehabilitated.
Nyaruet Philip is a university student from Gambela and member of the Women Peace Network. She says that the workshop sessions will have a strong impact on her future work.
Before, I can't talk in front of people. Now I'm talking. Yeah.
Hannah Lona Bona, a speaker of the Western Equatoria State Assembly, says that the workshop helped build her skills in mediation and conflict resolutions.
I've realized that I have some of the skills, and what I've learned has added value on the skills that I have. We have the document that is Women's Agenda for Peace. Must be memorized. I use it as one of my documents.
The United Nations country representative in South Sudan, Ezadua Derek Spriggs, says that the United Nations is an organization that focuses on gender equality, especially during the times of war. And women in sub-Saharan Africa perform most of the agricultural work on the continent. Yet, Briggs says they fear have less access to the tools needed to start their own business than men do.
We focus on women unapologetically because it's women who are disadvantaged.
Briggs says that the international community must keep a close eye on developments in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Queen Makelele from Nairobi.
A group of Egyptian medical doctors are performing free surgery for hundreds of patients at Wau Teaching Hospital. Health authorities in western Bahr el-Ghazal state say the team of 15 doctors from Egypt are expected to treat 700 patients during their 1 week in Wau. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau, the response to the free medical procedure is already overwhelming the visiting doctors.
State authorities say they are sharing the visiting doctors' expenses with the Egyptian government. The state of Western Bahr el-Ghazal is paying for the doctors' accommodation, meals, and their return travel to Egypt. The Egyptian government is paying for the other leg of their transportation and for the equipment they need to carry out medical procedures. Isaac Kleto is Western Bahr el-Ghazal's state Minister of Health. He says the arrival of the Egyptian doctors is a blessing for many. Kleto says his state has few doctors with the same skills as the Egyptian medical team. He says the state also lacks the medical equipment doctors need to perform complex procedures. Kleto thinks bringing the doctors to South Sudan is a good investment.
But we thought that as a government to put the resources that we have to make this camp. In the past, we used to make camps like this, for example, in one specialty, like eye problem. But this time, we tried to do a more comprehensive one. That's why we have this big number of 15 doctors who are specialized in various areas.
Kleto said the week-long visit by the Egyptian doctors will help strengthen the state's health system because local doctors will be able to interact with their Egyptian counterparts and gain experience. Kleto hopes some chronically ill residents of the state will be able to receive treatment that will improve their quality of life. He says hundreds of people have signed up to see their visiting doctors.
We agreed that for the ophthalmology, daily we see 100. Up to now, those with eye problems who have registered are 300. So this way, we see them in 3 days. They finish even before that week. And then for the medicine, that is the physician, we see 50 on daily basis. Up to now, those who are registered, I think around 200. So if you say, for example, if you see 50 on daily basis because they don't have operations, it's easy for them to see a big number. And again, the operations of eye problems are quicker and they don't stay long in the hospital. That's why we see big numbers. See them, diagnose them, take them to the theater, operate on them, and then the next day, you discharge them. And again, in Option Ghana, we open also fixed number.
The number of people registering for the free medical services is increasing as people from the neighboring states of Warab, Northern Bahr el-Ghazal, and Lakes show up at Wau Teaching Hospital after hearing of the visiting medical team. Professor Mohamed Higezi works with Cairo University as an orthopedic surgeon. He says the turnout has surpassed the Egyptian doctor's capacity. Higezi warns that the visitors might not be able to treat everyone in the limited time that they are in South Sudan.
We have equipment with us, but this equipment could not treat every patient. We need another set of instruments to treat all patients. But the instruments we have lots of patients to do. And we are operating in the maternity theaters, and we managed to operate 4 operating tables. And we are working since yesterday doing cataract operations and eye extraction of cataract in old patients, blind patients, to make them see. And today we continue, and for the next 4 days. It will do for some patients. Some patients will benefit from this, but you could not treat all our patients in 7 days.
Matthew Chan, who has suffered from eye problems since 2010, is among those seeking treatment for the Egyptian doctors. He wants the Egyptian doctors to stay for longer than 7 days.
Let them come and make a month or 2 months so that they can save people. 7 days, that's nothing. See now, how many people? A lot. Thousands of thousands of people who are blind and they need treatment. Not only 7 days. If they want by any money that you pay, peace is to be paid. See now, people are now beating themselves because it is free of charge. Let a little bit call to the people so that they get something.
Between them, the Egyptian doctors cover different medical specialties, including orthopedics, eye diseases, general medicine, cancer, and vein surgery. Over the next week, they will also be performing kidney operations, dental procedures, obstetric and gynecological exams, and pediatric and neonatal surgeries. Hospital authorities say that as of today, the Egyptian doctors have successfully completed around 300 procedures, mostly involving eye diseases and injuries. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
And that report by Dimo from Wau brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song City Alosi by Eddie Kenzo.
Don't get confused. Ni le grand president. Pitson, president Ayaka.
Imekuwa muda sasa baba, sija kuimbia Lingala baba. Nimekuwa nikijishulisha na marege na mayaga. My blues zikafanya mimi nkalala. Sasa nimeamoka baba na imba Lingala. Waliniambia Lingala poa nifunge mshipi juu ya tumbo. Na nitue kilingala eti, beti Lingala reza moke. Wakaniambia Lingala poa nionge katikati ya wimbo.
We have been listening to Pitson with that song Lingala ya Yesu. I apologize, this is not Eddie Kenzo, but it's Pitson with the song Lingala ya Yesu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.